It's 108 on WGN. This is John Williams. The real big days of college basketball are...
Well, they're yet to come.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
I know. This whole week is great. I'm a big college basketball fan.
You are too.
Yes. Yeah. But my teams, none of my teams are in this year. None.
Who are your teams?
Louisville Cardinals are first. We know all about
them. They
were
last out, yeah.
And then Indiana and Wisconsin.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of weird to see Indiana out, especially Wisconsin.
You've got Butler in, though. Wisconsin.
Yeah, Butler will probably win their first game, and then smart people are saying that they'll lose to Purdue in the next game. They got whooped by Purdue earlier this year. So it doesn't look good for my Butler Bulldogs, but you never know.
Hey, they're in, and you never know.
I got them beating Purdue this time. Which is just so much fun.
I think I did, too. I think I used them kind of as my wild card.
Are you in Bob's
yes.
Brackets here
yes.
at the radio station?
Yes.
And Violetta, have you done your brackets, Violetta?
Oh, yes. I fill these all out.
Okay.
And I'm going to win it all.
Who do you have winning it all, Violetta?
Well, I have Villanova winning it all, but everyone's told me that's pretty basic.
That's okay.
That's okay. Basic works sometimes.
You know what's not basic? Montana. Don't have Montana winning it all. So who are your final four, Violetta?
My final four is Cincinnati, Carolina, Villanova.
I presume you mean North Carolina, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't write
that number
in
two.
Front.
That's okay.
Yeah, number two. And then Clemson.
Clemson. Okay, yeah, number five. That's
my upset.
That's a credible looking bracket.
Thank you.
That looks good.
Thank you very much.
What's your final four look like?
My final four, I'm trying to remember because I don't have it in front of me, but I know I have Virginia winning it all. And Cincinnati also.
Yeah, a lot of people like Cincinnati right now.
And
Cincinnati's
actually,
getting some love.
Well, I also love Cincinnati. I went to college there for 2 years before transferring.
Oh, very nice.
I just like the word. It's like such a crazy word.
Cincinnati?
Yeah.
Cincinnati, the home of Grater's ice cream and Skyline.
Looks like
Shelly.
Cinnamon, but it's not. I don't know.
I forgot who my other two teams are, to be honest. I think Duke maybe. And
you know, that'd be everybody's got a different way to make brackets. Like, do you think a lion could beat a Trojan? And then you vote for whichever mascot would win. But another way to do it, and I've never imagined this, is which team name or city do you just like saying the most? Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Now, that's kind of fun.
I like Clemson. That's why I had them beating Duke.
Well, nobody is smarter around here than Sam Panionovich, our friend who's now in Las Vegas. And he said one of the reasons he likes the South Dakota State Jackrabbits upsetting the team they're playing, I'll find it here in just a second, is because it's fun to say the South Dakota State Jackrabbits.
Absolutely. What's the line on the South Dakota State Jackrabbits? Did you ask him that?
He would know. That's
yes,
why we did have
know.
Him on. But he seemed to be so happy just to be saying Jackrabbits that he sort of, I don't even know that the conversation elicited that information. Anyway, we'll I'll be turning in our brackets 100% illegally, by the way, between now and 10 a.m. tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. tomorrow.
Hypothetically, we will be turning these in.
And then let the madness begin.
I was at the Bulls game last night with my sons, Grant and Griffin, and a friend of Grant's named Dom. Deadspin has an article about the Bulls game last night, and it is titled, Bulls Remain Committed to Losing. They have the screenshot and the actual video of DeAndre Johnson, this massive player, missing his free throw for the Clippers last night. The Clippers, after he misses the free throw, you see they're all running away to the other end to play defense. They rather anticipated Johnson wouldn't make his free throw. He's a terrible free throw shooter, so they're all just pulling back. And there are the five Bulls going for the rebound. All five Bulls are closer to the bouncing rebound than any of the Clippers. And three of the boys in red have actually surrounded the basketball, and then one of them kicks it out of bounds. And the whole crowd just goes, oh, you've got to be kidding me. This does not look like a professional basketball team.
How far would you have the Bulls on your bracket?
This is the truth. The very worst NBA team will win every game against the very best college team. The idea that as bad as the Bulls look, North Carolina could beat them. Oh, no, they could not. But anyway, the Bull bounces out of bounds. The Clippers retain the possession. The Clippers win the game. The Bulls have lost 8 of their last 11. After that play and then the next play where they didn't know who had deflected a shot, I stood up and said, this is too dumb for me, and we left. There was about 5 minutes left in the game. So we hopped in our car and then quickly became very interested in the outcome of that Rick Saccone, Connor Lamb congressional race in Pennsylvania. Were you following that at all last night? I mean, it was close all night long, and then these things usually start to separate. This one actually got closer. The final margin is 49.8 to 49.6 percentage points.
I went to bed, and I was talking to my wife, Sharon. I'm like, you know, they're covering this like it's the presidential election.
Yeah.
What, you know, sleepy southwestern Pennsylvania, live coverage.
Well, but Donald Trump didn't go to Pennsylvania last week and give that crazy speech for nothing. He didn't release the or impose tariffs on steel for nothing. He's shoring up Pennsylvania. He goes out there twice. Mike Pence is out there. Don Jr. was in western Pennsylvania. Joe Biden was in western Pennsylvania. There was a lot of money, more than in a Senate seat, spent on that race.
No, I get all that, but we're watching it like sport, the rest of us, you know.
20 points the president carried that last time, and now a guy you've never heard of, whose name is weak, Lamb, he wins.
It was a lamb slide.
Did you steal that or what? Oh my gosh, that's so awesome.
I'm sure that's not the first time it's been used.
It was a lamb slide over this Rick.
But it wasn't a landslide.
It was a lamb.
I know, but it was very close.
So 2 percentage points. 627 votes.
0.2 percentage points.
Pardon me, you're right, yeah. Steve. Yeah. 0.2 points. And the smart people today are saying that that may be a referendum or maybe not. This guy was a moderate Democrat. In fact, House Speaker Paul Ryan said that it was a conservative that won.
Well, no referendum on Trump. And he did. He was a conservative Democrat. But
sure, on guns, on life. Yeah.
But the fact is, it went 20% for President Trump, and Donald Trump went out there campaigning, and the people went to the polls and chose someone other than that. And I saw one account saying that if Lamb were to win or even be close, it could mean it would double the number of seats up for grabs in November. I mean, you know, if this district that was so Republican could go Democrat, it could really, you know, be a harbinger of big things for the Democrats.
I suppose so. Although actually, so say Lamb wins and they're still counting and recounting the vote there. That's my understanding, right, Steve, that they had those ballots that they were still, what do they call them?
The provisional ballots. I think they have until Friday to come up with the count.
So who knows which way it'll go. Although as they were opening some of the ballots after the fact, I'm not thinking of provisional. I'm thinking of something else.
Absentee
ballots. Okay. They tended to be going toward Lamb as well, which is a bit of a surprise to me. I thought that those tended to go to conservative candidates, to Republicans.
Well, you know, you've been talking about Pennsylvania. Here's the thing. If Lamb wins or Saccone wins, they've got to run again in November.
With different districts.
A different district, right.
That's the
I mean,
thing.
Not a completely different district.
No, but I mean, some of the people that voted for Lamb won't get to. Some of the people that didn't get to vote for Saccone now would get to vote for a Republican.
Now, they say that the way the maps is redrawn, that it would be a bit more friendly, the district, to Lamb.
To a Democrat. Well, that was the idea. The guess is that 2 to 4, 5 different congressional districts will go Democrat in Pennsylvania, which, this might surprise you, has more registered Democrats. But the way the districts have been apportioned over the years, thanks to gerrymandering, thanks to Republican control of the state house there, it is favoring Democrats, the way it does Democrats, it favors Republicans the way it does Democrats in Illinois. So they've had to redraw the districts, and those will be the districts that they'll run in November, unless there's some change of that, some court decision that changes that. Hey, listen, today is the day of the 17-minute walkout. It's 1:17 now on WGN Radio. Did your kids or your school or you participate? I'm going to pause here. I want you to call in. I see in Marietta County in Georgia, in Cobb County in Marietta, Georgia, 16 high schools, the kids that walked out have to now do detention on Saturday. They have to go to Saturday school or face a 5-day suspension. And in schools across the country, students who chose to walk out of the building and protest are going to be punished. In other schools, that's not the case. Mostly what we found in the Chicagoland area is that schools will not discipline the kids, even those schools that didn't endorse it or didn't cooperate, they weren't going to punish the kids. I don't know if really hardly any schools in the area. Downers Grove said that they might offer the kids a suspension, but mostly all we called all of our alma maters, Violetta, Steve, Elif, me, and all of those schools had no punishment plans for the kids that walked out. And some of them were almost cooperating with the students to give them a safe way to leave the building and protest the gun violence in schools. What happened at your school? What did your kids do? What did you do? I'm just kind of curious. I need you to call right now. Let's see what happened. 312. I want to know the school and what you did. Call or text, but I'd love to hear from you. It takes you 2 seconds. 312-981-7200. I asked you what happened at your kid's school today. Let's start with, I think that's Judy on line one. You're on WGN. Judy, go ahead.
Hi. I was at Naperville North today supporting the students there. I'm a parent. There was maybe 125-150 adults there. And a few pro-gunners.
That's weird. So was there any confrontation between the two?
No, we were distanced. Lots of police. Calm and just really proud of our students.
That's Naperville North. I appreciate your call. That's Judy. Let's go to Sandy. You're on WGN. Where were you, Sandy?
I was at Willowbrook High School in Villa Park, Illinois.
And?
The school didn't, they didn't stop the students from walking out. They actually protected them and gave them directions on what to do. And it was students only with police surrounding the area. It was very peaceful.
What'd you think of all of that?
I thought it was wonderful. I took pictures. I'm extremely proud of my daughter for standing up for what she believes in.
That's Sandy. Thanks for the call, Sandy. Patricia, you're next. You're on WGN. Go ahead.
Hi, John. My granddaughter, Emma, participated in the high school, Geneva High School in Geneva, Illinois. She's a sophomore there, and I went to support her. I would say there was probably about 200 students out there and probably about 50 parents and one police officer sitting in his car. So it was very peaceful, and I just wanted to be there to support her. So I think it went very well.
That's Patricia. Thanks for your call. Connie, you're on WGN. Where were you this morning?
Hi, I was at Naperville North also, and it was very peaceful. There were, I think, well over 1,000 or 1,500 students out there, and they had a regular program. It lasted about an hour, and there were 100 parents and cars honking in support, and the people who were supporting the Second Amendment were in a different part of the sidewalk, but I know the principal didn't want us all there. So we were pretty good. We were pretty peaceful.
What do you mean he didn't want you there? Where were you?
They just discouraged parents from coming. They didn't. It was a student-led observance.
Yeah, and then did the students do the program, or did faculty or staff address the student body?
As far as I could tell, and I couldn't see. It was way down in the football field, and I was on the public sidewalk. But I think it was all student-led. There was one student I heard that had lived by Sandy Hook Elementary School, and he's now a student at Naperville North, and
wow.
So he gave a talk.
I'll bet.
I bet
fascinating.
That was pretty moving.
What a shame that this is the cause, but isn't it, positive to see the students taking an interest in and taking charge of a national debate? I've never seen anything like this.
Oh, it's wonderful preparation, yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for the phone call. That's Connie, also at Naperville North. It's 126. You know, one kid that I worry about a little bit, in a way, is that Hogg kid, H-O-G-G. He's from Parkland. Is his first name Andrew? I follow him on Twitter. I am one of 500,000 people that follow an anonymous student who's now a national spokesperson against school gun violence. And he's on TV all the time. They go to him for sound bites. They go to him for press conferences. He's never smiling. He's so righteous and strident and angry and sincere and strong and bold and all of the things that I expect he'll be in 20 years that you and I maybe are today. But I'd never see this kid smiling. I mean, obviously, it would be weird if he was. But do you know what I mean? He's just sort of this angry voice and face, and he has these sort of wrote lines. He says, it's time students speak up. The slaughter's got to end. These politicians have ignored us for far too long. He always has stuff like that. and he's good at it, but I'd like him to also be a 17-year-old, too. And he never smiles. That's Fleet Foxes. Right away, I know that one. Love me some Fleet Foxes.
The door slammed loud and rose up a cloud of dust on earth.
Major concert releases all over the papers and offices today. Ravinia, Pitchfork, Lollapalooza ticket information is out today. The Ravinia Jazz Festival in Highland Park. Man, some good music coming to town. Fleet Foxes at Pitchfork on July 21st. Lauryn Hill will be there. Chaka Khan. Los Lobos at Ravinia. We'll listen to some of this other music a little later on. Anita Baker's still out there. Blood Orange is at Pitchfork, right? Blood Orange, Elif would be at Pitchfork, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Love them.
Didn't you talk to Brett Denon recently?
No. Maybe not, because I don't know who Brett Denon is. Okay. Although maybe I did.
Jason Mraz and Brett Denon at Ravinia's going to be my show this summer.
Have you seen Tony Bennett out there?
Yeah.
He will be at his 39th concert at Ravinia. He'll turn 92 this year. Kristen Chenoweth and Michael Feinstein, don't you think that would be wonderful? August 14th. Sunday in the Park with Audra McDonald. Chicago Symphony Orchestra at Ravinia. Is that going to be at Ravinia? Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, I want to do all of these. And I'm not a big music guy, but that sounds pretty good. By the way, one other quick thing. I want to talk with Phil Vitale about the restaurant scene, as we always do on Wednesdays at this time. But a lot of you are calling and texting about your kids' participation or not in the school walkouts today. I didn't read the text line, but Violetta, you're reading them, right?
Yeah, there's a lot coming in. 630 saying they were watching Nickelodeon with their kids. It went off air for 17 minutes with a message about kids stepping up. Another 630 said, if my kids walked out, they'd be grounded for a month. I support the Constitution. And 847 says, are you serious? Most kids are just looking for an excuse to cut class. Can't believe you're falling for it. 224 says their grandkids are homeschooled, and at 10 they said a prayer for all 17 victims.
All of the calls we took were from people whose kids were participating, and they were very proud of it. Obviously, some of the texters are on the other side of this issue. I don't know how you're on one side. Like, if to me, this is not on what side of the gun issue you are. We're all on the side of don't shoot up schools. So if the kids walk out for 17 minutes, pro-gun or anti-gun, I would think you could get behind that. Listen, I'm telling you, when I went to high school, and granted it was in the age of rotary telephones, but when I went to high school, the biggest issues we were upset about was that you couldn't get seconds on cinnamon rolls during the second period of lunch. These were the issues that motivated us. These kids have so much more to deal with. They seem to be so much more mature and serious, almost to a fault. And if they want to get motivated and activated and take charge of this issue in their own way, how in the world could you be against that civics lesson? And maybe the kids that feel differently won't march, or they'll have their own march. I just think this is more of, as much as, because I don't think the kids are going to change the world anyway, but I think this is very much about civics. And I think you can applaud that no matter what side of the issue you're on. That's maybe easier for me to say than for you, but I certainly applaud them and the parents that are supporting them. And I know a lot of you do, too. It's 1:40. Phil Vitale is in our studio, the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune. Hi, Phil.
How you doing, John?
You're enjoying a mint.
I am. It keeps me from coughing.
All right. How are you?
Minty fresh.
Yes.
Don't you appreciate that he's enjoying a mint?
And he smells terrific, yes.
Yes. Well, he handed me 5 mints just before I got on.
I did not do that. So, Phil, let's just talk a little bit about a couple things that really aren't in your bailiwick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I'm going to watch the basketball tournament.
Right.
Because there's three of them right now, the men, the women, and the NIT.
Mm-hmm.
Where are some good places to go?
Well, the interesting thing is my colleagues over at Red Eye did a nice long list
they would.
Of bars, but they did them by team. So, for instance, if you are a big Kansas backer, you might consider Benchmark or Lottie's Pub. Or if you are big on North Carolina, then you want Gamekeepers on Armitage. And Northwestern, go to Cork and Kerry at the park on Princeton Avenue.
This is a nice idea. So Red Eye has that. I presume redeye.com?
Yeah.
By the team, you can find the bar near you that supports your club. That's good.
Exactly, because there's a nice breakdown. I mean, look at all these in red. They've got even better.
Because I want to see if there's some Butler bar around here. Gaslight on North Clark. Oh, I don't live too far from there. I could go to Gaslight. If we were thinking, though, Illinois, if we're thinking Big Ten, Michigan State has, good grief, 10 of them here.
Mm-hmm.
Purdue has a few. Wisconsin has about 10. And that's as it should be. Then there's just some Big Ten bars.
Sure.
Hawkeye Bar and Grill, Lynx Tap Room, Max Wood Grilled, etc.
And I can't imagine how many bars will be following Notre Dame in the NIT.
Is that a cheap shot?
It's just Chicago's got a lot of domers. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah, I know, but they're in the NIT.
If they'd been in the Big Dance, who knows? But in the NIT, on the other hand, they might play four games.
Yeah, that's true. Well, that's the thing. The message that you have to send if you're in the NIT and don't think you deserve it, mm-hmm. hello Louisville, hello Notre Dame, is you got to go win the damn thing then.
Right.
Prove them
right.
wrong. St. Patrick's Day is right around the corner. Let's just finish basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any places you particularly like? You know, if you're downtown Chicago, we've mentioned mm-hmm. this place a couple times. I don't think it's a great restaurant, but it's a big room, and they have a lot of TVs, and it's Allen Hood right next
sure.
to us. If you're just downtown and want to know where's the place with a wall of TVs where you can watch some games, Allen Hood, which is on the east side of the Tribune Tower, it's kind of facing the south is the door. It's on the east side, is a restaurant bar that has a lot of screens.
I don't know if they'll have their outdoors open a little bit with the fire pits and the enclosed.
Their outdoors is nice.
And they have some ridiculous amount of beers on tap.
Yeah,
I lost track.
72 trillion, I think.
Exactly, right around there.
72 trillion,
right
yes.
around there.
What about Irish stuff? We're dyeing the river at noon this Saturday.
I know. Someone asked me for my St. Patrick's Day advice. I said, I assume you mean directions out of town, because it is going to be a madhouse.
I know. The weather's going to be nice, too.
It's going to be nice. But, I mean, I was just checking some of the best known Irish bars around, say Irish Oak up on Clark Street, on the 3511 North Clark Street. They have a big thing. They're sold out. They sell by tickets, and Saturday is completely sold out. So you can, go to the door and sing sad songs, but you're not getting in.
I've been to some places on St. Patrick's Day where it's like that. I'm an outlier because they sold it out, but that does not sound like fun to me.
Well,
standing in a crowded Irish bar,
right.
spilling beer on people in the middle
right.
of the day.
But the people who are there are fine with that. I've been in once or twice, and besides me, there are no panicked faces going,
I know.
Dear Lord, what have I gotten myself into?
I know.
They're all like,
Bob, how are you?
Right, exactly. What's the place? Lizzie McNeil's.
Yeah.
Just down on the river, right on the river. They're opening at 7 a.m. on Saturday because you don't want to watch the dying of the... But, of course, what a great place to watch some of the dying, I think. And
maybe that's the time to go, though. Go to 8 a.m. and just do your boozy brunch version on a Saturday at 8 a.m. You know,
right.
go ahead and get an early start. And then,
right.
I don't know. You still got to kind of hang around. If you're there, you want to see the river be green.
Right.
And it's not green for 24 hours afterwards. Well, it is, but it's not super green.
Sunday morning is not going to be excitingly green.
Yeah.
It'll still be some vestiges of green, and so will you probably if you've been partying. So if you've been partying that whole day. I mean, congratulations for making that 9 a.m. call on Sunday if you did it.
Yeah, really. What else have you got on your notes over there?
Let's see. I was thinking of places like Frontier, which is also good for basketball, by the way. Going on the twofer. They're at 1072 North Milwaukee. Two floors, a gazillion TVs, an outdoor patio that's really a four-season patio now. They've got it enclosed. And nice food, especially if you like wild game and things like that, which is kind of their thing. And that's a great place to watch basketball.
Frontier. Give me one of the place that's on your list.
Oddly enough, the new Michael Jordan's since July, Michael Jordan's restaurant out in Oak Brook, which is on 22nd Street, across the street from the mall. They're having, they've got the TVs and all the rest of it. They're doing some madness with a if you wear your collegiate jersey to the restaurant, you get a free order of garlic bread at the table. So there's that. They have some bracket buster burger that is like this stack of, good Lord, if you can finish this, you should get a free pump or something, something that...
something to keep your heart going when it
defibrillator
stops.
Defibrillator pads with every purchase.
Fair enough. It's 1:46 on WGN. Phil Vitale, the restaurant critic from the Chicago Tribune, is in our studio. Is there new James Beard news? Has the voting advanced any other rounds?
Yes, they just announced this morning the finalists. The nominees, the official nominees, and...
But we had a long list that we went through a week or two ago.
Those are the semifinalists.
Semifinalists.
That was the big one. And now we've got these are the top five in every category. These are the ones that are officially nominees.
I have to pause, but mm-hmm. Is Chicago represented here pretty well?
Pretty well.
All right, give me those in a minute. It's 1:47. This is WGN. Phil Vitale is here. I'm John Williams. And if you've got a question or comment, 312-981-7200. Phil will take all comers. We'd love to take your call. Moments ago, we were talking about the students who walked out of school and what the reaction was from the parents, the kids, and the faculty. And some were pro and some were con. This texter from 630 said, John, because some people are so blinded by their party's talking points, they don't think clearly. Here's a great quote from Stephen Hawking. The greatest enemy of knowledge is not ignorance. It is the illusion of knowledge. Assault rifles, high-capacity magazines, and bump stocks are not protected by the Second Amendment. Period. John, my child's a student at Yorkville High School and was alarmed by news late last night that another student was making threats. A week earlier, another student was reported to have a bullet on school grounds. Our child's terrified, decided to come in late today. From 815 to the texted who opposed the student walkout because they support the Constitution. Do you know the freedom of speech is protected by the Constitution? It's 1:51. You can text to 312-981-7200. Phil Vitale writes about the food scene. He's the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune. He's in our studio. So the James Beard semifinalists are winnowed down out of the finalists.
The finalists.
What do we got?
Well, in the Outstanding Baker category, Greg Wade of Public and Quality Bread is a nominee for the second straight year. In the Pastry Chef category, yeah. Meg Gallis of Boca is a nominee for the second time. She was previously nominated in 2016. Boca Restaurant itself is up for the Outstanding Service Award. And the principals at the Boca Restaurant Group, Rob Katz and Steve Bame, are nominees for the third time in the Restaurateur category.
So would you say they're the big Chicago winner in terms of nominations, three?
In terms of those are the national awards.
Yeah.
There's also the more localized Great Lakes, Best Chef Great Lakes category. Great Lakes is one of 10 regions within the James Beard universe. And all five of the nominees out of Great Lakes, which includes Michigan, Ohio, and Indiana, all five are from Chicago. Andrew Brochu of Royster, Abe Conlin of Fat Rice, he's a three-time nominee now, Beverly Kim and Johnny Clark at Parachute, they're up for the second time, David and Anna Posey of Elske, they're nominated for the first time, and Lee Wolin of Boca is a nominee for the third time. So Boca is just kind of covered with glory in these nominations this year.
I got to go to Boca. What kind of food do they have at Boca?
High-end, very standard, not standard, I'm sorry. I want to say highly creative, but every time I say that, they think, clouds of foam flying above your head, and that's not what they do. But it's solid regional American, very, very seasonally focused food. Lee Wolin is just a terrific, terrific chef. He also has the new restaurant over at the Cedar Hotel that just popped right the heck out of my mind.
You are one of the judges.
Viceroy.
The Viceroy Hotel. And the first floor restaurant in there is...
Violetta.
Oh, I didn't know there was a first floor. Yeah. I only go to the rooftop.
That's all right. You're helping me out already. I'm telling you.
If there's a pub or bar, Violetta will get you there. She knows the hotel. Okay, what's dinner for two with hors d'oeuvres and two beverages going to cost me? Boca.
I'm going to say 150, 175 maybe.
Per or for two?
Oh, for two. Mm-hmm. I was thinking, I'm extrapolating tax and tip and out the door.
Yeah.
You start hitting the wine list hard, you might go a little harder than that.
That's Boca. And the street that's on is?
That is on Halstead Street.
Halstead. All right. Phil, it's nice to see you, as always. So some advice, if you just missed it, check our podcast of this conversation. Some ideas about places to watch the NCAA and other basketball tournaments. Some places to and not to go for St. Patrick's Day. And some James Beard nominees. Anything else you want to pass along?
No, I'm dead. I've had it.
You're great. That's Phil Vitale, restaurant critic at the Chicago Tribune. We're listening to featured music at some of the festivals this summer.
Well, let's go, let's go, little sweetheart.
Well, I did a real nice job. If you are looking for a place to drink and watch the NCAA Bucketball Tournament from Alabama to Xavier, they've got all the affiliated bars in town. Alabama's got a place, Auburn's got a place, Butler's got a place, Clemson, Creighton, Dayton, etc. Notre Dame's got a bunch. Northwestern's got one. Oh, shoot. When does Northwestern play? In the NIT. I don't remember. I got to find out. I'm looking it up. Michigan's got a bunch, and on it goes. Wisconsin, Xavier, and then ACC, Big Ten, and Pac-12 bars that kind of favor those conferences. By the way, the walkout updates include these. We asked some schools in the area what happened. I guess, Steve, you're going to be doing some of this here as well, huh, at the top of the hour?
Yeah.
Lyons Township, 300 kids at the North Campus, more than 700 at the South Campus. They report it was all very respectful. This is the school that Elif went to and that my kids went to. They read the names of 17 victims, released a balloon for each of them. Shortly following a 17-minute mark, they went back to class. A lot of the schools had versions of that. Wheaton Warrenville South and Wheaton Community High School, we talked about them yesterday. As a school, they said, we did not organize activities, but some student leaders did. A number of kids participated. The students were calm and respectful and got back to class within 20 to 30 minutes. Bishop McNamara said over half of the student body of BMAC voluntarily gathered in a supervised, organized environment in the school gym.
There you go. That's Terry Granger, the principal there, fine school. Now, another part of that, though, John, is, you know, some schools were canceled in Bradley Bourbonnais High School, which is
the woods,
the closest to Bishop Mack, actually canceled theirs over someone had made a threat or two.
Oh, really? So yeah. They just stayed away from it completely.
Right.
Hmm. All right. I was intrigued last week by a story that was in the news, and we're just going to follow up on it a little bit today because it turns out Lake Michigan is still there. A single company new to the area is going to pull 7 million gallons of Lake Michigan water off the lake every day. Should we be concerned about that after the news on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago? Hey, if you're a smart player.
Thinking big thoughts. So you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Vampire Weekend. Go grab them two for me, Ella. Hi, it's John. It's 2:07 on WGN. Just doing some music research here on the show today, looking at some of the festivals in town. We see the Ravinia lineup. We see the jazz lineup from Ravinia at Highland Park. We see Lollapalooza tickets going on sale on Tuesday. By the way, the Lollapalooza story, Lollapalooza tickets going on sale on Tuesday. Here's what it says in your Chicago Tribune. Lollapalooza's 2018 lineup remains a mystery, but those looking to attend, regardless of who or what hits the stage, should take note. Tickets go on sale at 10 a.m. Tuesday. The four-day festival, with rumors that include Arctic Monkeys and Vampire Weekend performing, go on sale. A weekend pass will once again cost $335.
$135 for the weekend?
$335. Okay. The price and on sale times for single day tickets have yet to be announced. 4-day VIP packages will also be available Tuesday, priced just like last year, at a basic price of $2,200 per person. If you want platinum access, where you actually get to play guitar, it's $4,200 a person for the weekend platinum package. The potato salad cannot be that good. Oh, my gosh.
I don't understand how people blindly buy their weekend passes saying, I don't care who's playing, because there have been many years where I've just not been excited at all about it.
And there you are. And if you bring a date, you're out $8,400.
You put up $8,400, you'll find something to be excited about.
Oh, yeah.
That is the equivalent of Super Bowl tickets. That's no, they know nobody's going to buy that. They know nobody really wants it that much. What they know is companies will get tents or they'll get passes and then they'll give them to people. Those aren't for human beings. Those are for companies with yuckety mucks. It's going, hey, Bob, I've got a thing. Why don't you and Lois? Actually, no one named Lois is going to have the $4,200 ticket, but you get my point. It's a corporate thing, for crying out loud.
We need to decorporatize events because regular people can't go to anything anymore.
I kind of agree with you on that, Steve.
Just kind of?
Well, I mean...
I mean, it's true.
No, I mean, because I'm just now running them through my head. That's what happened to the Super Bowl, the World Series, the NCAA.
Forget that stuff. How about an afternoon at Wrigley Field?
But even
or a
regular
Bulls game?
Or, yeah. You know, yeah.
It's all, and you go to Wrigley and, you know, it's sold out and there are a lot of empty seats because they're all corporate owned and people don't go to them.
Yeah, that's bad optics, too. This is most notable on some Cub games, but especially on New York Yankees games, if you watch those, because, you know, East Coast TV favors East Coast teams. So you'll see the Yankees on TV a lot. And son of a gun, if the seats behind home plate are often empty, and they may have 40,000 people there.
Right.
But you're only seeing 400 of them, and ain't many folks sitting there. They've got to get bodies in there, like they do seaters.
Like seat warmers.
Yes, at the Oscars.
Seat holders.
Just get some folks in there. And if they have to move, or just give those seats to people if they're not used, figure out how to get somebody to sit in those seats for the game.
They can call me. I'll go.
I would. Violetta will be part of the hotline. You know, quick, get over to Wrigley Field.
Yeah, run down the list. I'm sure that we can fill those seats.
So there was a story a couple of weeks ago in the paper about Foxconn, that company in Wisconsin that is, I think, Chinese-based, and they'll make LED parts for all sorts of gadgets. And it's a big deal that Foxconn came to Wisconsin. Hopefully, the president was behind this, those jobs will actually come to fruition. They got great concessions from the state of Wisconsin. And one of the things they were writing about in the paper the other day is that they'll get the use of 7 million gallons of Lake Michigan water a day, 4 million gallons of which will be treated and returned to Lake Michigan. Oh, great, said a fish in Lake Michigan. I'm a little worried about what that actually means. But then 3 million gallons will be used, will be evaporated, will not go back to Lake Michigan. I don't know exactly where that goes. But there's issues about who gets to use that water, period. Is that too much water to give to anybody? 7 million gallons of Lake Michigan water will be pulled off for that one company every day. Now, as it turns out, there's somebody who's pretty good on this subject. His name is Peter Annan. He's the co-director of the Burke Center for Freshwater Innovation. He is also an author. And about 5 years ago, I don't know, Peter, when was it that you and I shared the stage on the museum campus? Was that like about 5 years ago?
Yeah, 5 or 6 years ago, yeah.
And by the way, I said author. You're an author, right? What did you write?
That's right. I wrote a book called The Great Lakes Water Wars, which is about the Great Lakes water diversion controversy, and Foxconn fits right into that.
So there we were on this sort of symposium on fresh water, which at the time they said is the new petroleum. This is the commodity the world is going to fight for and value the most, fresh water. I don't know if that's hyperbole or if that's true. Do you agree with that premise?
No, I do. I do agree with the premise. I mean, the way I like to put it is that we're leaving the century of oil, and we're entering the century of fresh water. And that's not that cars will necessarily be running on water in this century, but that water, clean, reliable fresh water, will increasingly replace petroleum, in my opinion, in this century as the defining natural resource, economically, socially, environmentally, etc.
Talk about this Foxconn company and their use of Lake Michigan water.
Well, it's complicated, and you know, the thing with water, and we live in this water-rich region here in the Great Lakes region, 20% of all the fresh surface water on the planet is in the Great Lakes, and so it's important that citizens of the Great Lakes embrace the complexities of water policy, because if we can't understand the complexities of water policy in this water-rich region, then we're sort of deferring that to other areas. And so Foxconn, as you said, is a major corporate facility roughly three times the size of the Pentagon is what's planned, 13,000 employees. And what has happened is that the siting of the plant is coincidentally landing right on top of the rim of the Great Lakes watershed. So think of a watershed like a soup bowl rim, and the Great Lakes watershed is a soup bowl rim that has five large lakes in it. And there's a thing called the Great Lakes Compact, which is a legal document that serves as a water fence designed to keep Great Lakes water inside the Great Lakes Basin. And things get complicated when you have a major.
But the basin then isn't just the basin isn't just the lakes themselves, but it's sort of the land just off of the lake. It reaches some sort of crest, and then the water on the land, say as rainfall or whatever, either flows back towards the lakes or back towards the Mississippi River. Am I right about that?
Absolutely right. Yep, very well said. That's exactly.
We're protecting the water in that region, not just in the lakes, but in that basin. We want that water all returned toward Lake Michigan. We want to have rules to govern the use of that water.
Yeah, and basically what happened was the Great Lakes governors and the provincial premiers in Ontario and Quebec got together as we're entering this era of increasing global water insecurity. There was a belief that over time there'll be increased pressure to send Great Lakes water outside the Great Lakes Basin to far-flung venues that, of which there are many globally and continentally, that are running out of fresh water. So the governors decided, look, we want to make this law that keeps the water inside the Great Lakes Basin and will attract the jobs to the water rather than sending the water to the jobs.
Well, there was a plan to send tankers full of fresh water just for consumption to other parts of the world, right?
That's right. And that was actually the case that spawned the mission that led to the Great Lakes Compact. In 1998, a small consulting firm in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, hatched a plan to send tankers of pristine Lake Superior water to Asia to try and create an international market for Great Lakes drinking water. And 158 million gallons per year is what they proposed sending. And it really rattled officials in the Great Lakes region because there wasn't a law on the books in Canada to stop that. In fact, the Nova Group got a permit by the time this became public. They had already been permitted to do this. And there were laws to stop it on the U.S. side, but the U.S. laws don't work in Canada. So that's why they tried to come up with this binational, multi-state province series of agreements to keep Great Lakes water inside the Great Lakes Basin.
Okay, so here comes Foxconn, and they say, well, we're going to operate within the basin, but you said it's actually just on the crest, right?
That's right. So half the plant be outside, half of it inside, roughly. And so, and one of the things, when the authors of the compact sat down to create these rules, they knew that there were some cities that sat right on top of the crest. And how are we going to handle those? And so they created an exception clause called the Straddling Community Exception Clause, which allowed those communities to apply for a Great Lakes diversion to the outside of the Great Lakes base inside of town, use that water, clean it to Clean Water Act standards, and send it back. But it's called the Straddling Community Exception Clause for a reason, some of the authors tell me, because they didn't envision it being sort of the straddling factory exception clause. Other authors of the compact that I have talked to had said, this is absolutely what was envisioned. It's not a big deal. And so we have the drafters of the compact are in somewhat disagreement in this unanticipated situation.
Right.
They all agreed. None of them ever envisioned a giant 13,000 employee factory landing right on the rim of the Great Lakes Basin.
Well, I said 7 million gallons of water a day. Is that a lot? Is that a little? I don't know anything about 7 million gallons. Sounds like a lot.
7 million gallons sounds like a heck of a lot of water. Lake Michigan has 1.3 quadrillion gallons in it, which is a number that doesn't even mean anything to people, including to me, and I cite that number regularly. And so the only reason we're talking about this is really not so much the amount of the water, which is not a lot. The reason we're talking about this is whether or not this specific incident is testing the Great Lakes Compact legal document in in new and anticipated ways, and how that specific language should be interpreted in this case, and is it setting any legal precedents for later on?
Right.
We talk about water quantity and water diversions. It's particularly important for people in Chicago to put this in perspective, because the city of Chicago sits upon by far the largest and most controversial Great Lakes water diversion in history. The Chicago River flows backwards because of a diversion that started in 1900. The city was polluting its water drinking supply in Lake Michigan because of unsustainable practices, and rather than change those practices or put in modern treatment facilities, which would have been modern in 1900, not today, they decided to reverse the flow of the river instead and flush that sewage to St. Louis. And that diversion continues today, and the city of Chicago sends 2.1 billion gallons of Lake Michigan water to the Gulf of Mexico every day.
Oh.
And it is seen today as a model of what we don't want to have replicated in the Great Lakes Basin.
Well, we are just discharging, as a matter of course, 2.1 billion gallons every day. Okay, then 7 million gallons going to Foxconn is not that much water.
That's not that much water, and we have the water. We have a lot of water here. And again, if Foxconn was a plant that landed completely inside the Great Lakes Basin, the governors throughout and certainly Chamber of Commerce people were out saying, this is exactly what we wanted. We want companies to come, use water here sustainably and cleanly, and employ people off that water. We want to be the blue economy.
Well, then what's the problem here? But, I mean, so even if they're a little further out, they're here. We win. What's the problem with Foxconn being on the cusp?
The issue is, again, this language of the compact and what was the intent and what is the precedent that we want to set. Do we want all those companies to be setting precedent on the edge of the basin or outside the basin, or do we want it to be cleanly and clearly inside the Great Lakes basin?
Well, I can answer that. What is the quality of the water that they're going to be returning to the lake?
Well, it's got to be treated to Clean Water Act standards, which means it should be the same quality that any corporate.
I know that, but I mean, it should. Do you have, you know, is that a fairly adhered to standard? If they said 4 million gallons are going to go back into Lake Michigan, I have suspicions about that just because I don't trust big companies. But the water, do you think actually will be pretty good shape that they pump back in?
I have no idea, but I would hope that the regulators that keep track of those kinds of things in Wisconsin and the federal government would hold them to that standard. And that's the role that public citizens and advocacy groups need to make sure that the company is held to those standards. And if they don't hold the company to those standards, then there's always the option of litigation.
Yeah, well, it just seems like we are so against regulation these days. And companies do what companies do, that I'm suspicious of that, but hopefully unnecessarily. It's 2:21. Let's just pause for a minute. Peter Annan's on the phone line. He's the co-director of the Burke Center for Freshwater Innovation. You may have been following this story about Foxconn going to Wisconsin and using all of that water, maybe not too much of the water, and maybe the water returned ain't so bad. Just a couple of other questions about that. And did Wisconsin give too much to get that plant? I don't know if you have a feeling about that, Peter. We'll pick it up here in a minute on WGN. Peter Annan is the co-director of the Burke Center for Freshwater Innovation. And we asked him to comment a little bit about that story last week about Foxconn going to Wisconsin. I just don't like the name of that place. I don't like where they're from. They're making electronic gadgets, and I just imagine chemicals and stuff. And then they say, don't worry, 7 million gallons isn't that much, and 4 million of them each day will go back into the lake. And I'm suspicious about that. And then I don't like the fact that it just seems like these companies hold states almost hostage. If you don't give me everything, then I'll just find somebody else that will. So I'm not in a real warm fuzzy about Foxconn. Do you have anything to say, Peter, about the deals that companies are getting from states like this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really wise for all of us to be cautious and even skeptical. I mean, journalists like us are paid to be fairly cynical and skeptical and hold people to, you know, the high standards that are out there. And I do think that, you know, Foxconn has made a lot of promises, and the state has made a lot of promises. The state of Wisconsin has made a lot of promises to Foxconn. And again, this will be up to all of us to make sure that the agreements are kept, that the company does what it's promised to do. And but it has been given a lot by the state of Wisconsin. I mean, $3 billion in incentives, you know, which is basically subsidies by the taxpayers. And the state of Michigan and the state of Ohio were also competing for the same facility, and they really didn't even come close to Wisconsin's incentives. And then one of the things that you alluded to earlier as part of the incentive package was waiving some environmental regulations, so some wetlands regulations and some other regulations. And I think that sort of really ramped up the skepticism, and it's really ramped up the angst about exactly how quickly things are moving, which is very quickly for the size of the facility. Then we waive some rules. Now we have some compact complications that could also be challenging. And so it is possible, John, that this whole thing ends up in court just because of the pace it's moving and the issues that are surrounding it, the concerns, the skepticism. And again, the place where it could end up in court is because it is just really testing the Great Lakes Compact in new and anticipated ways, and there's a possibility for private citizens to hold things up there and slow them down just because of the the fine print in the Great Lakes Compact.
Well, I love the jobs. I think we all do. But remember, there is no new water being made on planet Earth. It is a finite quantity, and we need to protect it. And we have this giant resource here that we shouldn't take for granted. And I think sometimes we do. All right. Listen, Peter, let's you and I stay in touch. Anything I can do for you? Any websites you got or seminars you're throwing that our audience should know about?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Burke Center at Northland College is doing a lot of neat work up on Lake Superior and elsewhere, and then GreatLakesWaterWars.com is the book website, which is keeping people up to date on things, and a new version of the book, including a section on Foxconn, is coming out this fall.
Great Lakes Water Wars. We'll talk then. Stay in touch. Thanks, Peter.
Thanks, John.
Peter Annan.
I never was in love, you know that you were never.
Featuring a lot of the music that today we're discovering, you know, all of the announcements about ticket sales for Lollapalooza. They've announced the full lineup for Pitchfork. Ravinia was out today with a big promotional campaign. The Highland Park Jazz Fest has its announcement out about tickets and singers. And Steve, this is Kevin, who is this singing right now? I know you're a big fan.
Are you expecting us to guess here?
No clue.
I saw 50 Cent was going to be at Ravinia.
Yeah, it seems fitting.
Is this 50 Cent?
No, it's not.
Close, but no cigar.
I believe this is Blood Orange.
Mimosas.
I was going to guess that.
And they're performing at Pitchfork when, Ella?
Saturday, July 21st.
This is your band? This is the one you're looking forward to?
Yeah, I've been wanting to see them for a few years now.
2:39 on WGN. You know who's also going to be at Ravinia this summer? When's the last time you saw Lyle Lovett? I saw Lyle Lovett years ago when he was just coming out with the wild hair, even before he married Julia Roberts. Julia Roberts, right? He was married to Julia Roberts?
Yeah.
Holy cow, how did that happen?
I saw Lyle Lovett a couple months ago.
That's when she was the prettiest person on earth and he was not.
Yeah, they had a show. He did a show at the Auditorium Theater then. I went with Kathy O'Malley in the crowd, Judy Markey.
No kidding.
And Julia Roberts was in the crowd.
So I wonder if they are scratching their heads going, did we really get married?
Right. So I saw Lyle Lovett up in Waukegan just a couple months ago, and he was with John Hyatt. You know John Hyatt?
Sure.
And they just sat on chairs and played guitars and told stories. It was a great show.
The show that I saw Lyle Lovett in was shortly after he had kind of hit. You know, he did She's No Lady, She's My Wife.
Uh-huh.
Just all those really wry, great songs. He had such a unique look. And by the way, looks aren't everything. We talked a lot about looks on yesterday's show. I'm sure that they had a chemistry that bound them together for 9 months, and then they got a divorce. Anyway, so happy for them, and I just wonder if they look back on that. I saw him on stage with Lyle Lovett and
his large band
and Harry Connick Jr. Really? Oh, that was a 1-2 punch. That was really fun. Just
where did you see that?
It was at the, it was when I was, I'm pretty sure this is what it was. I was nominated for a Marconi 1,000 years ago. And at the awards show, they both came up and did about 2 or 3 songs.
Wow, nice.
I was sitting there hoping that I was going to get the big broadcast award.
And congratulations on your nomination.
That's enough, really, to be nominated.
It's very nice to be nominated. I didn't realize that had happened.
Yeah. Here's a little Lyle Love.
And if I had a boat, I'd go out on the ocean. And if I had a pony, I'd ride him on my boat. And we could all together go out on the ocean, set me up on my pony, on my boat.
Is he funny when he talks?
Now if I were
yeah, they were both very funny. Because they're very different.
Oh, how so?
Well, you know, he's very wry. He had a very wry sense of humor. John Hyatt was a little more down to earth, was talking about shopping at the Jewel in Waukegan. it was a fun show.
And if I had a boat, I'd go out on the ocean.
Lyle Lovett at Ravinia this summer. I don't have the date, but I'll bet you could find out if you got a computer, a fancy computer. By the way, speaking of fancy stuff, did you hear the president talk about the space force that he wants the United States to have?
At first he was joking, but then people said, it's a great idea.
Well, here's what happens. And, you know, listen, this is how maybe great ideas do happen. You come up with something, and at first it seems whimsical or a lark, and then you go, actually, maybe that's not such a bad idea. So that's how we came to the militarization of space. Here is the president explaining it in California yesterday. At least I think we're going to get that.
You see what's happening? You see the rockets going up left and right? You haven't seen that for a long time. Very soon we're going to Mars. You wouldn't have been going to Mars if my opponent won. That I can tell you. You wouldn't even be thinking about it. You wouldn't be thinking about it. My new national strategy for space recognizes that space is a warfighting domain, just like the land, air, and sea. We may even have a space force. We'll develop another one. Space force. We have the Air Force. We'll have the Space Force.
Out of the sky, his rockets ignite. Gets into battle like faster than light.
Flash Gordon,
Lord of the jungle, the hero who stalks. The beasts call him brother, the goes to war.
Defenders of the Earth.
Defenders. The Army, the Navy. You know, I was saying it the other day because we're doing a tremendous amount of work in space. I said, maybe we need a new force. We'll call it the Space Force. And I was not really serious. And then I said, what a great idea. Maybe we'll have to do that.
Master of magic spells and illusion. Enemies crumble in fear and confusion. Mandrake.
Defenders of the Earth.
Defenders.
That could happen.
His strength is a legend. His skills conquer all. Armed with his power, we never will fall.
Defenders of the Earth.
That could be the big breaking story. Look at all those people back there. Look at them. Oh, that fake news. They know, they understand.
He's got these buttons, and if he pushes, he just gets the most fantastic responses. One is, anything bad about Hillary Clinton? You know, aren't you glad I won? Hillary Clinton bad. She was a loser. We wouldn't be going to Mars if Hillary Clinton was president because she doesn't know how to drive a spaceship, I guess. So that gets a big line and laugh or, you know, cheer. And then the media. If he just says anything that derides the media, then, why? Ah, that is so clever. And they go nuts for that.
If you say enough stuff, something's bound to be an okay idea.
Yeah, right. Throw enough against the wall and some of it'll stick. Is that your policy over there, Violetta?
Well, I'm just saying he says a lot of stuff where he's not quote unquote serious.
Right. Yeah, I don't think he really thought a lot about being a defender of the Earth. Plus, I'm not sure that I'm on board the militarization of space anyway. Can you imagine if the United States and China and Russia and all these countries have their spaceships out there? I mean, it sounds Star Warsian, but good grief. It's hard enough just putting people up into space and bringing them back alive, let alone having the Russians or the Chinese chasing us down and zapping us.
Being next to each other on Earth.
I know. Well, that's the thing. I thought that one of the great things, one of the great hopes about the moon or Mars or space is that, you know, we don't have landmines. We don't have bullets. We don't have warring factions. We don't have walls. It's pristine. It's not polluted. Stuff like that. And, you know, if you're talking to military people, maybe the idea of getting a space force is kind of cool. But I'm not sure that I wholly embrace that. I do wholly embrace making the United States safe, but I just don't know that we need to have a space force right now. I'm not on board the space force because nobody has persuaded me that we need a space force. And if we do, I want us to call it something other than the Space Force. That just sounds a little too Roger Ramjet to me. Let's just call it the United States Air Force. But I know it's not in air, it's in space. I get it, but Space Force just sounds too cartoony to me. It sounds too 1960s. Like, I don't expect the lips to match the sound when somebody is speaking to me about the Space Force. The way those old Japanese cartoons... Is anybody following me on this one? Do you guys know what I'm talking about? Would you watch those cartoons as a kid and the lips would not match the volume of
like
the words?
Like Clutch Cargo?
Clutch Cargo, right.
Right.
They would talk, but it wouldn't be in sync. Not exactly sure why, but that's...
A lot of times we talk and it's not in sync. Hey, I want to let you know of a story, and I think Judy will probably have more coming up at 3. We don't know too much yet, but Northwestern University has just put out an alert, concerns about someone with a gun on campus. You know, it's not unusual for schools to issue alerts like this. So there's one going on now in Evanston. It follows Evanston police reporting earlier that there were shots fired at Emerson and Maple. So that's not on campus, but not too far from campus.
Yeah, I was wondering. We have a downtown campus, too, but you're talking about Evanston, and I presume that's just now?
They issued the alert at 2:40, so the alert was issued about 7 minutes ago, and we do have reports that, you know, they're taking this very seriously, and students are being kept in classrooms and things such as that. So we'll follow it and let you know more as soon as we have more information.
Thank you, Steve. Mike, you're on WGN Radio. What can we do for you, Mike?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I'm just thinking, during the Obama administration, the controlling party, which was not the Democrats, really devastated the money funds to go towards the astronaut program and, you know, anything having to do with what Donald Trump is talking about. So my question is, either they've changed their minds or they're just following or whatever Trump says is a good idea, regardless of where is the money going to come from.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, think about that. It's, you know what happened was he was really excited, like we all were, when the SpaceX rockets landed in unison, and it just looked so fantastic, and you thought, wow, and that's our side. So anything is possible, and you can understand the sort of leap it takes, and it's not a great one to go, wow, if we can do that, we could control the space. And the president, I hope, was just riffing there. But you're absolutely right. Ask somebody in NASA if they're a little underfunded right now. They'll tell you yes. Imagine the cost and the payoff if you had a I don't even want to say it, a space force. If you, it's crazy, isn't it?
Steve, one more thing. If we go into space with our little machines, all those UFO reports, how do you think those folks that are not human are going to respond to us fooling around them?
That'd be pretty crazy if we got up there and the UFO started shooting back at us. That'd be terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for the call. Vampire Weekend is Lollapalooza, right? They're suggesting that they're going to be a Lollapalooza. That's not a for sure yet. The rumor is. Ticket information is out today on Lollapalooza tickets. Tickets for the 2018 tour. It's going to be August 2nd to the 5th. Go on sale Tuesday at 10 a.m. I think I see Vampire Weekend at Lollapalooza before. And you know where I also saw them? Was they one time performed with the Grant Park Orchestra at Millennium Park. So they were on stage at Millennium, and you could sit out on the lawn, and Vampire Weekend played with them. Very cool. Very cool. Pretty sure that's what happened. At least that's my recollection of it, which are sometimes different things. Kevin, do you have your brackets out, by the way?
Yeah, I do.
Every time I do this, I find myself going, well, I have no choice. Michigan has to beat San Diego. There's no way. So here's my final four now. Every time I do this, though, it seems like I come to different conclusions.
Yeah.
So tell me if this sounds smart or not.
Okay.
Cincinnati, Gonzaga, Villanova, Michigan State.
Yeah, sure.
Gonzaga, really?
No, the Zags are... I don't know. I don't like Gonzaga, but they are.
Why are you putting them in your top four?
Well, because I think they're going to beat Missouri. Well, I don't like this. I have no choice, Violetta. So then you got Gonzaga against North Carolina, and I'm trying to be clever here. So I'm taking the four over the two.
There you go. That works. Sounds great. That's a winner. That's a clincher. Everybody follow John. I'll give you mine, which is also a winner.
Okay, here we go. Well, that's why I'm asking. I thought I'd just share my vulnerabilities. What have you got?
I have Cincy,
yeah,
and Xavier, and Nova, and Duke. Although I do think...
I thought I talked you out of Xavier yesterday.
Yeah, I didn't get around to changing it. Maybe I'll change it by tomorrow morning. I do think that the winner will either be Nova or Purdue out of the East region. Whoever wins that Elite Eight matchup between Nova and Purdue, I think, will win the whole thing.
I would have Purdue winning, except they play Butler, and my pen cannot put Butler...
Right.
You know, can't put Purdue there. I've got Butler.
Even though yesterday you told me how badly Purdue beat them.
They spanked. We have no hope of winning that game. So I've got Butler winning that one. And then I've got Butler beating Bonaventure.
Yeah.
Which would be fun if they're not terrible if they beat Florida. So then I've got Butler and St. Bonaventure. Nobody else has that. And I think, well, hell, if they can beat Purdue, they can beat St. Bonnie. So I got them beating St. Bonaventure. So I've got Butler in the Elite Eight. I have no option. I have no choice.
I love it, John.
That's what happens.
I love your bracket.
That's what happens. By the way, on the more serious side, the market is taking a little bit of a tumble today. Elif, where are we on the Dow, please?
The Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 248.78 points at 24,758.25 points, John.
All right.
The Dow Jones is down 0.99%.
Well, we've been worse. But that's not good. It's 2:57. Rowan and Anna stroll in next. What you doing today, Mr. Khan?
We got Ben Bradley's going to join us. Also, from the Post, Philip Bump is going to talk to us about this shakeup. And did you see what at the White House? And do you see now they're thinking about firing Andrew McCabe?
I just saw that.
Before he resigns.
Before he gets his benefits.
So he doesn't get a pension.
Yeah.
Which I think is, you know, that's one of those circumstances where it's like, hey, we're going to play hardball with anybody who doesn't agree with us in the White House. That's why these people take these government jobs, you know, big time lawyers.
Oh, yeah,
and,
right.
Yeah, I mean,
right.
they stay in them for that long term benefit. So, yeah, so that happened. So we'll tell you that's just in the first hour. Mr. Skilling will be here, of course, and then a special remembrance of Richard Hawking. And I'm not kidding. We really aren't going to do that because what was it that he did that was so important? People know they know him because he wrote those books and he was obviously an interesting figure because he battled his condition so bravely and then he was still had trouble with women, which is that's why he's my hero. He still had that and a woman he got into a fight with one of his girlfriends and she left him out in the sun.
You're serious about
this?
I don't know that story.
Yeah, that's one of the more famous ones.
I was impressed how long he lived, in a different... And was still able to be, able to communicate.
Right.
If your brain's thinking, what a shame that you can't express your thoughts. And lucky for him that despite all of his incapacities, he was able to do that.
Amazing. Amazing contributions.
76 or something.
76, right. Yeah. Amazing contributions.
Well, we'll be listening, Ro.
Thank you very much, John.